Last week, we had our refresher reminder lecture on what NMR is. Of course, you all studiously and aggressively read your NMR notes over the weekend, I'm sure. So we're perfectly ready to move on now to structural elucidation. No water in the lab, please. And since we've been doing aldehydes and ketones as one of our major functional groups this quarter, I figured we'd do some examples of molecules that had carbonyls as our first set of examples to work on. Now, generally in NMR, we start out with alkyl halides or something a little simpler, but I think these would be good. I've got three specific examples I want to do, and I think they'll do a good job of showing us the types of considerations we make when we're trying to solve for molecular structure. So the first compound has a formula C4H8O, and it's got three absorbances. A chemical shift of 2.449, that's a triplet. No, not a triplet. A quartet that integrates to 2. Have a chemical shift of 2.34, that is a singlet that integrates to 3, and then we have a absorption at 1.058, that is a triplet that integrates to 3. So with that information, what is the structure of the compound? Well, what should we do first? Before we even look at the absorption information, notice that I've given us the chemical formula, which someone asked in the other section, well, how do we work the problem if we don't know the formula? Well, it's a lot harder problem. But realize that even if we have an unknown compound, if we were in a real analytic lab, aside from NMR, IR, those types of techniques, you also have either in-house, which means in the same facility, or by mail, which is how it's often done. You could do elemental analysis, which if you think back to Chem 1A, you had problems back then, or even Chem 50. A compound has 73% carbon, 18% hydrogen, whatever percent oxygen, a molar mass of whatever. Determine both the empirical and molecular formulas. So if you had that, if you did that analysis, you would have the chemical formula available. Why is that chemical formula useful? Because we could calculate something known as the degree of unsaturation. Which, in this particular case, what is saturated mean, or what is unsaturated, either way. Yes?
That means the carbon is not single bonds that is unsaturated, either double or triple.
Okay, so it means you could have a double bond or a triple bond, but when we're talking about the phrase degree of unsaturation, there's actually one other type of structure that would count. A what? Right, in other words, having a ring. Why? Because in order to take two parts of a compound and wrap them around it into a ring, you'd have to take a hydrogen off of each of the ends. So rings in technically also count as a degree of unsaturation. Now, colloquially, when we use the phrase, it does refer usually just to the absence of double and triple bonds. So when we talk about saturated fat, doesn't mean ringless fat in that case. But for degree of unsaturation, it refers to double bonds, triple bonds, or rings. And remember, there's a formula that we have that we can calculate the degree of unsaturation. Can someone remind me what that formula is? Ooh, stop right there. Because the 2C plus 2, that's an important value. That is the maximum number of hydrogens possible given a certain number of carbons. And it should make sense, that calculation, because think of a straight chain alkane, for example, no branches. Well, all the carbons in the middle, each are going to have two hydrogens. The two ends are each going to have three hydrogens. But you can think of it, therefore, as two hydrogens plus an extra one because they're at the end. So if you have 10 carbons, that means you're going to have 10 pairs of hydrogens plus the other two at the head, at the end. So 2C plus 2. Now, sometimes, though, this formula has to be adjusted a bit. So you're about to give me some more info on this. What else would you put there? Okay. Ah, yes, that is true. But there's something else even that we need to put in. Plus the number of nitrogens, yes.
Minus
the halogens. Why? Because if you put a halogen on a molecule, you have to take a hydrogen off. And that's not unsaturation, that's just what you have to do in order for a hydrogen to even be connected up. You have to remove that hydrogen. The opposite is true for nitrogen. Nitrogen is trivalent normally. So if you have a carbon here and a hydrogen there, and you put a nitrogen between the two, in order to end up with a valid structure, you have to have one more hydrogen even on there. So for each nitrogen, we need an extra hydrogen. For each halogen, we remove one. So what I've written up there now is the adjusted count once you take heteroatoms into account. Now, this is supposed to be a comparison. That's how many we're supposed to have. Then, like Lux said, that we then would subtract out the hydrogens that you really have. Because we're going to find out the difference. In case you don't remember that term, heteroatom, if we're referring to compounds as hydrocarbons, that means they should only have hydrogen and carbon. And organic molecules, that's all they have to have, hydrogen and carbon. Anything that's not a hydrogen or carbon that's different, well, that's what that prefix hetero means. So heteroatom means different atom, something other than carbon or hydrogen. Once we take this difference, we divide the whole thing by 2, because each degree of unsaturation is a pair of hydrogens. So, for this compound C4H8O, what is the degree of unsaturation? 1. Because for 4 carbons, we should have 10 hydrogens. We only have 8 hydrogens instead, so 10 minus 8 is 2, divided by 2 is 1. So with 1 degree of unsaturation, we have 3 possibilities. A ring, a carbon-carbon double bond, or a carbon-oxygen double bond. Well, let's see what would happen if we had a ring. Let's just look at a couple of structures that would have a ring that has the right number of atoms, just as a place to start the discussion. So one possibility is cyclobutanol. Another possibility THF. But as I'm about to show you, neither of these would be acceptable. But let me make this note to the side. If a ring is present, then there can't be a carbon-carbon double bond or carbon-oxygen double bond. Since there's only 1 degree of unsaturation. Now, let's start with the compound on the right. It's a little easier to analyze. How many sets of equivalent hydrogens are on that compound? Now, and I realized that in our review last week, one of the few topics we didn't recover is what is an equivalent hydrogen? So can someone tell me, if we've got two equivalent hydrogens, what does that mean? Yeah.
They are in the same chemical environment, which is they are having the same neighbors of hydrogens or carbons or heteroelements.
Okay, so it's two atoms that have the exact same chemical environment, which means they have the same neighbors, and the same neighbors no matter how far down the structure we look. So every single position, the first position away, second, third, fourth, are identical completely between those two different hydrogens. So looking at THF and ignoring, I scared you all by recalling these terms of antiatopic, diastereotopic, homotopic. Forget stereochem for the moment. Just on the basis of position, how many different types of hydrogens are there on THF? Like if I wanted to label, as I did last time, HA and HB, how many A's, B's, C's, how many am I going to need? You say two, tell me one set of equivalent hydrogens. So the one that's right next to where the oxygen is? Yes, those are equivalent because the molecule is symmetric. Since the molecule's in fact got a mirror plane through the whole darn thing, the two halves are exactly equal with each other. So the hydrogens just to the left of the oxygen are identical to the ones to the right. They are not the same as the remaining hydrogens because the ones I just wrote down are one position away from the oxygen. The others are two positions away. So they automatically have a different chemical environment. Now, if it has two types of protons, how many unique signals will it generate? And singlet, doublet, triplet, all the splitting patterns, assume those count as one. So how many signals am I going to generate? Two, because number of sets of hydrogens is the number of signals. Now, what about cyclobutanol? How many different types of hydrogens do I have there? I didn't see your answer. Three, four, three, four, three, four, four, yes, four. Why? Because you've got the carbon that's as furthest away from the alcohol. You have one position closer, which there's two places that have that same kind of environment. There is the hydrogen that's on the position where the alcohol is. And then, the one that people often forget, the hydrogen that is the alcohol itself. Just because it's on an oxygen doesn't mean anything. It's still a hydrogen, so it would still count. If I have four types of hydrogens, then I have four NMR signals, don't I? Which means neither of these two compounds is the right structure. Because I only have three NMR signals, but one of these has four, one of these has two. They don't match, so they're not the right structure. Now, we could try to investigate other cyclic structures, and what's going to turn out is none of them are going to match. And there's only a limited number of other possibilities, even, because we've only got a handful of carbons that we're working with. So let's take a guess about whether the compound might have a carbon-carbon double bond or carbon-oxygen double bond. Because if it doesn't have a ring, it has to have one of those two others. Now, if you were to look in your lab test at the correspondence charts for chemical shift, that would be really useful right now. Because we could find out three pieces of information. That if we had a hydrogen on an alkene, that has a chemical shift of roughly 4.6 through 5.9. If we have a carbonyl and we have an aldehyde, then that has a chemical shift of between 9 and 10. If we have a carbonyl but don't have the hydrogen right on the carbonyl, but it's a ketone hydrogen instead, then that has a chemical shift of between 2 and 2.7. Based on those chemical shift values, do we have a carbon-carbon double bond? Well, I told you that the compound has a chemical shift of 2.5, 2.3, and 1.1. Do any of those numbers fit 4.6 through 5.9? So does this have an alkene or not? Does the fact we don't have an alkene peak mean we don't have an alkene? Let me show you what I'm getting at. It is possible to have an alkene without seeing alkene hydrogens. If you had 2,3-dimethylbutene, then you have four methyl groups. In this particular case, they happen to all be symmetric. They all be identical, so you'd only get one signal. But it wouldn't be between 4.6 and 5.9 because the hydrogen's not on the alkene. The hydrogen is one off the alkene. But in order to end up in that situation, you have to have at least six carbons in your compound. Or six atoms of some sort. Technically, we could put an oxygen on there, but not in our specific case. Well, in our case, we just don't have enough atoms, period. But if you were to put an oxygen on there, and if you made it an alcohol, realize you would make something that tautomerizes. So you've got to be a little bit careful about what you try to guess. So, since this compound does not have enough atoms, and since it does not have a peak in the right range, there is no carbon-carbon double bond, which automatically means it has a carbonyl, because it has a degree of unsaturation. And if we're shown that it doesn't have a ring, and it doesn't have an alkene, it has to have a carbonyl. So we didn't look at all possibilities with rings. But if you did, it might be useful for you to try it. Draw some other of the ring structures that are possible and see if any of them would give you anything that even approaches the right kind of spectrum. But I was helping us out just because this could go on forever, the discussion. I said, all right, there's no ring. Well, there's a degree of unsaturation, so that means there's a carbon-carbon double bond or a carbon-oxygen double bond. Well, there is no carbon-carbon double bond because we can't make a structure that would lack that peak. And given our limited number of atoms, that means we would have to have that peak show up. We don't have it, so it's not there. So it means we have to have a carbonyl. Does the compound have an aldehyde in it? Well, no, because look at what the chemical shift is for an aldehyde, between 9 and 10. Our highest number is 2.5. Nowhere close to 9 or 10. So there's no aldehyde. That means this is a ketone, which means it's 2-butanone, because there's only one ketone possible with four carbons. Notice I didn't use any of the splitting information. Didn't even get that far. Didn't have to, because I used the other information I had to rationalize it. Are you going to have to do these kinds of tricks with every problem you work? Not necessarily, but you might get to an answer without having to go through what I'll show you in the next examples, using the splitting. Then let me finish this off. Since there is no peak with a chemical shift greater than or equal to 9, the carbonyl must be part of a ketone. There's only one possible four-compound ketone with the right degree of unsaturation. You could have cyclobutanone, but that's 2 degrees of unsaturation. So this is the only answer possible. How can we help prove that? Well, let's see the fact that there are 3 types of hydrogens. And let's rewrite the chemical shift information with a little color coding. The reason I want to do that is because it's going to help you when you're solving problems to know which atoms split which other ones. That's what we want to keep track of. So the three absorbances were chemical shift 2.449, 2.34, and 1.058. Right there, we could identify which hydrogen is which, even without the rest of information. Well, it's better to do it with the rest of information because what I'm about to show you, there are exceptions every once in a while. But look at 2.5 versus 2.3. Those have to be HA and HB, one or the other. Why? Because those are the protons closest to the carbonyl. Carbonyl causes hydrogens to have a range of 2.0 to 2.7. The higher of the two numbers is going to be the one that's on the interior of the molecule. Usually when you have a terminal functional group, it's a lower chemical shift. Internal, higher. So when we're comparing the two, the usual best guess is the higher chemical shift is the internal one, which means this is going to be HB, and this is going to be HA. HC would be the one with the lowest chemical shift, which makes sense because it's the furthest from the carbonyl. Why would any of these have higher chemical shift because of the carbonyl? Well, because the carbonyl is a delta positive, which means it's an electron withdrawing group, which means it deshields whatever's next to it, and deshielding causes larger chemical shift. Now, what were the splittings? Well, the first compound got split into a quartet, the first hydrogen, which makes sense if it's being caused by the green protons, HC. Now, you don't have to use this color coding convention when I'm doing on your problems. It's just a recommendation. But I colored it in green to show it's those green protons that caused the quartet. There is no splitting for the second peak. Why? Because there's no neighbors. If we look at the carbonyl, this particular carbonyl has no hydrogens on it. So that carbonyl, in fact, blocks splitting between neighbors. Now, HC has got two neighbors to it. So, not even look back at the original set of info, I know it's going to be a triplet. And it's due, again, to those blue hydrogens. So, everything matches. That is our answer. Questions about that first example? Okay, well, I've got two more left. The first one, in fact, has exactly the same chemical formula. But it's got different chemical shifts to it. Different, both chemical shift and splitting patterns. Here I'll say this one has a peak at 9.57. That's a doublet that integrates to 1. There's a peak at 2.39. Which is a doublet of heptets. Now, there's a misunderstanding that some in the other section had. I want to make sure that you all don't have the same misconception. Doublet of heptets. Heptet means 7. But doublet doesn't mean 2 of them in this case. Because someone was looking at it this morning and said, wait, doublet of heptets. That means you've got 2 heptets. Meaning 6 neighbors here, 6 neighbors there. No. Doublet of heptets means you've got 6 of one kind of hydrogen on one side of it. That's where the heptet comes from, the N plus 1 rule. It means you have a different hydrogen on your other side. 1 hydrogen. The 1 hydrogen causes the doublet. The 6 hydrogens cause the heptet. They're both going on at the same time, which is how we end up with this classification of doublet of heptets. There's one more peak. Chemical shift of 1.06. That's a doublet that integrates to 6. Is it possible to have 6 hydrogens on one carbon? Then how the heck do we end up with an integration of 6? If they're what? That is right. Can you generalize that idea? You're given exactly the right answer, but what if I said it integrated to 12? In general, what would that mean? See, the answer he gave is the iso group, and meaning isopropyl, meaning 2 methyl groups attached to a common point, which if you didn't have any branching past that common point, that means the 2 methyl groups right in front of me with the water even. Wow. Just like the cell phone's going off, I'm going to make you all sing water-related songs every time I see that now. So, 2 methyl groups attached to the same point, the 2 methyl groups are equivalent. Each methyl group's got 3 hydrogens, so that's 6 hydrogens. At least that's one way you could do it. You could also have three carbons that are all identical, each with two hydrogens. What it means is there's multiple chemically equivalent carbons. When you have an integral ever that's greater than three, it means you have symmetry of some sort in the molecule. In fact, before we even solve anything, I want to write that down. So the only way that integration can be greater than 3 is if there are multiple chemically equivalent hydrogens. Or more specifically, carbons. That will have those chemically equivalent hydrogens. Now, with that one statement, we can solve the compound structure in one step. I want to do it a different way. So, what did we start off with last time? Degree of unsaturation. This is the same formula, so same degree of unsaturation, which is 1. What kind of compound is this? Because last time we rationalized, could it have a ring? Well, maybe here's these example structures. No, it turns out the answer was no. Could it have a carbon-carbon double bond? Well, the way we figured it out was looking at chemical shift, and the answer again was no. Did it have a carbonyl? Yes, if it didn't have a ring or if it didn't have a carbon-carbon double bond. We didn't go through the same analysis here because what if we look at the chemical shift? Chemical shift of 9 means what functional group? Aldehyde. The only other functional group with hydrogens that high up are carboxylic acids, which have to have 2 oxygens. And I already wrote on the previous page that chemical shift 9 to 10 means aldehyde. If we have the fact that we have a chemical shift that's that high, and we know we have a degree of unsaturation, we know it's an aldehyde. And so let's start with that. And I'm going to do the same thing I did before where I rewrite my peak information and colorize it. This time I'll do my colors first and then arbitrarily place them where they need to go. So, first one. We'll have our carbonyl hydrogen. Which is split into a doublet. Now let me jump to the end here and write the integrations. So the carbonyl only had 1 hydrogen on it. There's another carbon that only had 1 hydrogen on it. And then there's something that integrates to 6. If the carbonyl is a doublet, which is the only hydrogen that could have done that splitting, did the blue ones or the green ones split the carbonyl? Realize something had to split the carbonyl because that's the only way we can end up with a doublet. So if we have a doublet for the carbonyl, which ones, the blues or the greens, did the splitting? Why blue? There's only 1 of them. Remember that a doublet comes from the fact that you have 1 neighbor. 1 neighbor that spin might be up or down relative to the magnetic field. That's what causes a doublet to form. If the green one split it, it would cause the heptet, which is what we have in another situation. One neighbor makes a doublet, so we know that it has to be the blue that split it. That means that right next door here, we have HB, and we have no other hydrogens. Because if you did, it would be a different splitting for the carbonyl. If we didn't have any other hydrogens, the only other atom we could put there is carbon, which once we put two carbons there, we used all four up. That's the answer. We again don't need the rest of the information. And for those of you who just went, whoa, what happened? I'll go through that again. We know it's a carbonyl because chemical shift greater than 9. With that carbonyl, we have a splitting pattern of a doublet. A doublet means there's one and exactly one neighbor. One hydrogen neighbor. Well, that means there can't be more than one hydrogen there. The only other thing we could put, because we already used the oxygen up, is to put carbons there. Once we put carbons there, we used all the carbons up. And that's it. We've figured out the structure of the compound. Since the aldehyde hydrogen was split into a doublet, it has exactly one and only one neighbor. Neighboring hydrogen. Which means the other two atoms at the neighbor position must be carbons. And we can verify this is correct because notice this is exactly that isopropyl case that Luck was trying to get me to talk about, because he had the right answer for this particular case. Two methyl groups attached to the same position, they're chemically equivalent. So the hydrogens on both methyl groups are the same, which is how we end up with that integration of 6. I just used the wrong color, darn it. There we go. That's what's causing the heptet, in fact. And then the carbonyl carbon causes the doublet, when we're talking about those blue hydrogens. The blue hydrogens, there's only one of them, and that's what splits all 6 of the carbons into just a doublet. Yes?
So, the alpha hydrogen is HB, right?
That's right. This is one of my favorite problems, because normally when you see a carbonyl, and I've already mentioned this in a previous lecture, carbonyls prevent splitting, because if we're talking about carbonyls in ketones. But if you look, HA is only one position away from HB. So even though it's on a carbonyl, it's close enough. If you look at the first example we did, you had carbon with hydrogen, carbon with nothing, and carbon with hydrogen. That's why they didn't split. But here we have carbon with hydrogen, splitting happens. Yes? Why it's called a double of heptet? Because if you're looking at blue, it has one neighbor right there, and that causes the doublet. It has a different neighbor over there, and there's 6 of them, and that's why it causes a heptet. Doublet of heptets does not mean 6 neighbors here, 6 neighbors here. It doesn't mean double heptet. Doublet is something different. So later, the next problem I'm about to show you, there's a triplet of triplets. It doesn't mean two neighbors here. Triplet, no. Means two of one kind of neighbor on this side, and that's one triplet that's caused, and two of a different kind of neighbor over here, and that's the other triplet that's caused. Should we just segue into this last problem then? Give you another exposure to this? Question was asked, do we have to go through all of this on our lab quiz when we're given our answers? And the answer was kind of yes. I mean, you're not going to have to write an hour-long story like this, but you're going to have to give me a structure. So whatever tricks or observations you can make to jump to that answer, you've got to be able to make. And that's why I selected these three compounds. I didn't select the three easiest problems to make us all have a nice, feel-good, happy, oh, isn't NMR easy experience. No. Because that's not normally the case. So why fool you all into thinking that, and then you're mad later? I start out with the rough stuff, and then later on when you can solve problems, you go, oh, okay. Let's see that third example. Third example, C6H10O. And again, it only has three absorbances. 2.55 for a triplet that integrates to 4. 2.05 that makes a triplet of triplets that also integrates to 4. And then 1.06 for a doublet. No, not a doublet. A quintet that integrates to 6. No, I'm looking at the wrong problem. 2. There we go. So 2.55 triplet for 4 hydrogens, 2.05 triplet of triplets for 4 hydrogens, and 1.06 for a quintet. Quint means 5. And it integrates to 2 hydrogens. Yes? T for triplet. So S singlet, D doublet, T triplet, Q quartet. Past that, you usually write it out or you have some other symbol. So take just a minute to try to solve that on your own. Now, hopefully you started out this problem the same way we started out the other two. Start with the degree of unsaturation, which, just so we're all starting out the right way, what is the degree of unsaturation? 2, that's correct, because it's C6, 2 times 6 is 12, plus 2 is 14. We only have 10 hydrogens, so 14 minus 10 is 4, divided by 2 is 2. So let's start right there. If we had 2 degrees of unsaturation, what kinds of things could we have? Could be cyclic. Could be bicyclic. What else? Could be a ketone. So, if you had a carbonyl, you have to have something else. because there's 2 degrees of unsaturation. We only have 1 oxygen, so it can't be 2 carbonyls. So we can have a carbonyl and a ring, or we can have a carbonyl and a carbon-carbon double bond. What if we had an ether or an alcohol? Then that means that we could have a carbon-carbon double bond and a ring. We could have 2 carbon-carbon double bonds. And we could have a triple bond, because a triple bond itself would count for 2 degrees of unsaturation. Doesn't look like this is helping us a lot, though, does it? Because this pretty much is telling us you can have anything. So maybe instead of trying to do one of these creative tricks, maybe we should go to the chemical shifts and such. Because do we have an aldehyde? No, because we don't have anything chemical shift high enough. Does it appear that we have an alkene? No. Now, we technically have enough carbons where we could end up in one of those alkene hydrogen-less situations. But I'm just going to tell you, no, that's not the situation either. So if there's no carbonyl and there's no carbon-carbon double bond, no aldehyde and no carbon-carbon double bond, based on the chemical shift, what might we guess is there? A ketone. Because if we had an alcohol, what kind of integration should we have? We should have an integration of one somewhere, because we only have 1 oxygen, so we can only have 1 alcohol, and so we should have an integration of 1 show up at some place or another. But we don't have that. We have integrations of 4, 4, and 2. So there's no alcohol. There might be an ether there. That's a tricky case, and I'll do a future problem like that. But based on the chemical shift, let's guess that it's a ketone. All right, if we have a ketone, our first peak, the largest chemical shift, has an integration of 4. What is the only way possible to have an integration of 4? Given the limited number of atoms in this compound. Repeat the question. The question was, if you have an integration of 4, which we do, what is physically the only way it's possible? If it's symmetric. So that means that whatever I do on one side, I have to do on the other. So if I have the 4 hydrogens there, here's how we make it equivalent. So since the hydrogen next to the carbonyl integrates to 4, the carbonyl must be completely symmetric. Not only must it be symmetric this first position out, but if all 4 of these are chemically equivalent, then whatever is next to them must also be chemically equivalent. Because if it wasn't, then these hydrogens themselves would not be equivalent. I'll say that one more time because we're starting to get a lot of circular logic in. to quote an old science fiction program, circular logic just makes you dizzy. So, oh gosh, that's right. I don't know what has happened in my brain this morning, but I guess I woke up on a different planet. Because I told this story, which I'll tell here just now because it's too late since I already mentioned it. I got to go through with it. But there's a reason why they were laughing a bunch in lecture today. So at some point here, someone was having difficulty reading one of the numbers I wrote down, which made me say, oh, well, you know, maybe it would be better if I just wrote in my own script, which then made me think of a T-shirt that I saw at a gym, which then made someone say, what, you work out? Like, they looked at me and said, do you go to the gym? Which then prompted me to tell a story about another former student that the last time that had happened, that, because, you know, I did get busy last quarter, I wasn't working out enough, but there was a time a few years back where on top of me not working out enough, I also discovered I liked donuts. And the two things are not a good combination. And so it ended up in a student at some point saying, Dr. Gray, you know, you might want to start working out a little more because you're starting to erase the board with your stomach. Which you can imagine, yeah, what his grade situation must have been like after that. But anyways, here's what I saw at the gym. In section one, if they're listening right now, they're rolling on the floor. I know it. Because this even got stranger, because when I started writing it out, I had to explain what I was doing. Because how many of you recognize that as a hexadecimal number? How many of you even heard the word hexadecimal? Even though most of you in here use computers and cell phones and smartphones and all that. So all of the just the fundamentals of computer science, which my generation, we grew up knowing this kind of stuff. What a byte is, B-Y-T-E, ever heard of that word? One piece of computer information, a byte is two bits, or two nibbles, I should say, each of which is a binary digit represented by four digits. Which if you take four digits in binary, that's the numbers 0 through 15, which we represent going 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, A, B, C, D, E, F, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, like that. So when you watch the matrix and all those digits floating around, that's what's kind of based on, this binary or hexadecimal code. You probably also don't know what this symbol means, because most of you probably haven't had logic symbols in your math classes. It means or, that's right. So, this is the T-shirt I saw. Which requires yet another level of geekiness. I really could demonstrate my geek card here, because you have to know some Star Wars references. Because if you read this, it says do or do... Oh, I forgot one important sign. The exclamation point, which in computer terminology means not. So this means do or do not. There is no try. Which is one of Yoda's lines in the movie. So you all have so little clue about this on so many levels. It just shows you how much older I'm starting to really get. But imagine the guy at the gym that I laughed when I saw his T-shirt and I said, that's funny. And then he kind of looked at me like, oh. Well, because he must have if he bought the T-shirt, right? Silicon Valley, there's all these computer programmers running around. But what are the chances that he just ran into another random person that I don't look like a computer programmer, I guess, that was able to read his T-shirt. So he was just kind of like, oh. Okay. Anyways. Little story to break the NMR up a little bit there, too. You know, you're all looking like, please make it end. So I made it end for a minute there. Back to the problem now. I have these four hydrogens that all are chemically equivalent, and the only way to keep them chemically equivalent, again, is if the next thing over is the same. Well, what do we got left? Well, we have a triplet of triplets. And we also have two more hydrogens that are left after that that integrate to a quintet. So here's a little bit of logic for you.
If we have a quintet, that means there has to be next to four neighbors. There's only two neighbors here, two neighbors here. So unless we pull this whole thing into a circle, we're never going to end up where we can get four neighbors again. And that's the point. The compound is cyclohexanone. Because here's those first four that I just marked a moment ago, HA. The blue hydrogens, I'll call those HB. It's the next peak down because it's the next position away from the carbonyl. The furthest position away, the lowest chemical shift, only has two hydrogens on it, which matches what I just drew. Rewriting the absorption information with the color coding, the peak at 255, the ones closest to the carbonyl, I'm making those the purple ones. Those integrate to 4 because they're symmetric, and so they are all equivalent. They're split into a triplet by the blue hydrogens, the next one over, that also are chemically equivalent, and that's why they also integrate to 4. They have a chemical shift to 205. They are split into a triplet first by the purple hydrogens, which there's only two of them at one time that split. And so that's why the purples only split into a triplet. Because two over there, two over there, only two acting on the neighbor at once. The red ones down below, they're on the other side of the blues. They are a different chemical environment. They're not the same as the purple ones. And so that's why they have their own splitting. It's a triplet of triplets. Then we have that last peak, integral 1.06. Or chemical shift 1.06 integrates to 2, and they're split by those blue ones. Oh, but this is the mistake I made the last time I gave the problem, and I almost did it right then again. I looked at one side of the red, I saw two blues there, and I almost wrote triplet down. But no, all four of those blue hydrogens are neighboring the red ones at the same time. And if you've got four equivalent neighbors, that's why this ends up being a quintet. So cyclohexanone, this problem. So we saw three examples today. One example in which I used degree of unsaturation and chemical shift to solve almost the entire problem. Didn't even really need to look at integration or splitting. Then I did another problem where I worked it based off of just one peak's worth of information and a little bit of logical deduction about the size of the compound I had. But I could have used splitting there as well because we saw our first example of something that integrates beyond 3. And then this is a classic example of symmetry, that you look for symmetry. You look for integrals greater than 3, because that tells you that even if the whole molecule is not symmetric with itself, you at least maybe have two methyl groups stuck to the same position. We will do more problems like this on Wednesday. But let me tell you what it is we are going to be doing today and on Wednesday. We are going to start, if you have not already started, the Diels-Alder reaction, which I know I didn't remind you to do a pre-lab, and I'm not going to check pre-labs today. So if you didn't do it, write it now. Just do what you normally do and hurry up and write it and hope that I won't kick you out. And focus on it before you focus on experiment 5, 4, or 3. So the melting points you should work on today, but after you get your reaction for experiment 6 going. The procedure is simple enough that I won't lecture beforehand, but I will tell you that since we have fumoids, you don't need the gas trap. So don't bother with the gas trap only because we do have the fumoids. We're also going to do the experiment in 1/5 quantity, just to reduce how much we're making. And we'll talk about lab reports on Wednesday, because I know we've got several experiments that we're wrapping up now. Hopefully, everyone's finished experiment 3 and 4. Now, there may be a couple of you that still have IRs left. On Wednesday, after
lab lecture, there'll be time for you to finish up all the experiments we've done so far. Hopefully. So, for today, just work on lab 6, and then if once you've got it, because doesn't it have a period of time where you have to just let it heat? How long is that? Half an hour? So half an hour of time, that's a good amount of time to get an IR or some melting points done. So let's go ahead and get to work.